Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Happy Sunday, everybody. Glad to have you back. It's a beautiful day, I hope. It's going to be a beautiful day. I have Dr. Huntington Potter from he's the director of the Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Research Center with me, part two of our conversation. Thanks for coming back this week.
Glad to be here, Jill.
Exciting, exciting things going on in the world of research with Alzheimer's. And last week, we talked a little bit about Leukine and what you're doing with it, but refresh our listeners' memories on what you're doing out there with Leukine.
Well, we have a clinical trial of a drug called Leukine that was very strong in reducing the plaques of Alzheimer's disease and improving the cognition and memory of mice. But since it's a already FDA-approved human drug for people with bone marrow transplant, we could immediately go into the clinic, and that's what we've done.
Outstanding. So your lab, in part two of our conversation, has some really great talent. You've recruited some terrific people. One of those people helped you find the correlation between rheumatoid arthritis and why people with that disease don't get Alzheimer's, Dr. Tim Boyd.
Yes. So Tim was a first-year graduate student in my lab when I was still in Florida. And he wanted a project, and I gave him a couple of choices, including answering the question, if possible, for why people with rheumatoid arthritis don't get Alzheimer's disease.
Okay.
And he jumped at the chance to work on that project and has been with me ever since in not only developing the understanding of what Leukine, or its scientific name, GM-CSF, does, but to show that it helped rats and mice with Alzheimer's disease, and then eventually designing the clinical trial that we're carrying out right now.
That's outstanding. And how did he figure that out? I know that's a tough question, but...
Well, it's a matter of thinking and testing. So what I asked him to do was to go into the library and make me a very long list of everything that was different in the blood of people with rheumatoid arthritis compared to people who don't. And we looked at that list, and then we said, well, this molecule doesn't look like it's probably protecting them from Alzheimer's disease. It has another function.
Okay.
And this molecule might actually be dangerous if we tried it in people with Alzheimer's disease. And by a process of elimination, we narrowed the list down to half a dozen or so and began to then do experiments. And it turned out that several of the molecules that were increased in people with rheumatoid arthritis had very curious effects on the brain. And one of them was GM-CSF, or what we call Leukine.
That's outstanding. And great to have that young talent. And recently, in the last year, you brought someone from Dr. Bruce Miller's lab, who's in San Francisco, right?
That's right.
He's got a great team out there with Dr. Boxer. And they are working on the tau and FTD, frontal temporal dementia, out there. But you were able to obtain Dr. Bree Boettcher.
Yes, and Bree is a wonderful neuropsychologist with a very energetic approach to research and has participated in the Leukine trial and has her own study as well, which is very important for studying the sort of the whole lifespan process of Alzheimer's disease from the very earliest stages. No real clinical problems, but maybe a little bit of amyloid in the brain,
okay,
what we would call normal, through the mild cognitive impairment stage and finally into the Alzheimer's stage. People volunteer to have their brain scanned. They volunteer to give blood. And this is going to give us a sense of what are the steps that lead to Alzheimer's disease and what steps may not lead to Alzheimer's disease, so we can predict who is at risk and who isn't. That's the reason for that study. Very important. If we have a drug that may help reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease, mm-hmm, we're not going to give it to everybody who's 50, but we might like to give it to people who are 50 who are at risk for developing Alzheimer's disease,
right,
like a statin drug.
Great. You know, it's so important. It's important to me personally, because I've been involved in a familial study out of St. Louis, Washington University, and my family, doing a lot of what Bree is doing. And we're trying to do our part to try to help out with this. But you need young talent in your in the world of research. We need young talent. And I know that you've been really open. We had a young lady from the Alzheimer's Association when I managed the Walk to End Alzheimer's, Anna Newman. And you embraced Anna, a high school student who now is at Stanford and hopes to come back and work in your office someday. But what do you look for, and why should a young person be interested in research?
Well, research is exciting. That's one of the main reasons.
Yeah.
And people who have a knack for science and have a lot of patience, have a long view of their life and how they might contribute to a disease process or even the basic science behind natural physiology, then they might be excited about trying their hand in the laboratory. And we invite people, you know, as young as 17 in the case of Anna Newman, to come into the lab and see what it's like to be a real scientist.
Right. And it can be tedious work.
I'm afraid it can. There are a lot of tubes of cure, colorless fluids that have to be pipetted between each other. The mice may take a year or a year and a half to develop the full amyloid deposits. And so science takes a long time, I'm afraid. But the outcome is so exciting that we keep at it.
Right. And with respect to Bree, Betcher, Dr. Betcher, I want to give her that proper title there. She is working with Dr. Woodcock as well, isn't she? So it's part of that continuum of care that you have from the time a person comes in and says, I think I'm having some memory issues. They go through testing. Is she giving you the ability to further that testing with PET scans and things like that?
Yes.
What's her role there?
Well, Bree is essentially a researcher in the whole Memory Disorders Clinic, Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Disease Center clinical program.
Mm-hmm.
So this longitudinal study that she's designed herself is one of her studies. She's
Great.
Part of the Leukine trial. She assesses patients that come through the Memory Disorders Clinic for their cognitive problems with special paper and pencil or even just questions and answers that people are subjected to. They're sort of fun, but they're hard, and
mm-hmm.
And people with Alzheimer's disease have trouble carrying out these tests.
I'm sure they do, and I know it's a necessary thing for them to do. It's probably a little scary once they get that diagnosis, but when someone participates in your research, they're going such a long way to helping to help you and other researchers try to find a cure. That's
yes.
what we're all looking for, and without those people and that research, we're not going to get there.
That's absolutely right. It's a collaborative effort, and the patients who become subjects in the studies of all kinds, not just the intervention studies like Leukine or the longitudinal studies, but just an examination of what their brain looks like, for instance, with these PET scans, have made a tremendous contribution to our research.
Oh, I love it. We're all working together. It's going to take that village, but we're all going to work really hard towards getting there. And I'm trying to do my part as well. And if you have any questions that you would like to ask at some point in time, please send them to my website. You can either go to 1430 Cruisin' AM. I said that backwards, didn't I? Or you can go to summitresiliencetraining.com to learn more. And I'll have information about how you can reach Dr. Potter's lab and give donations if you'd like to. And right now we're going to listen to a word from our sponsor. And we thank Bellevue Heights for allowing us to have this program with brilliant researchers like yourself, if I do say so.
You may. Thank you.
We'll be back in just a moment.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you'll ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Bellevue Heights believes that supporting families and caregivers is just as important as caring for our residents. We offer free monthly support groups, education and lecture series, and presentations by experts in Alzheimer's and dementia care. All of our programs are free and open to the public. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. And ask about our current and upcoming education opportunities and support groups. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Welcome back. I'm very excited to have Dr. Huntington Potter, he's director of the Alzheimer's Research Center out at University of Colorado Hospital, Anschutz. Thank you for being here with us today.
Glad to be here, Jill.
I know that you have spoken on several occasions about the correlation between Down syndrome and Alzheimer's. That's interesting. It's very interesting. Why do you think there's a connection?
That's finally been very clearly found out by scientists. So we now know that people with Down syndrome all have an extra copy of chromosome number 21. All of us have two copies of every chromosome, but they have three copies of chromosome 21. Mm-hmm. And the main Alzheimer gene is on chromosome 21. So that means they have three copies instead of two copies. That extra gene makes extra Alzheimer protein, and that begins to deposit in their brains in their teenage years. And by the time they're 30 or 40 years old, they have full-blown Alzheimer pathology in the brain. And that causes them to get demented by the time they're 50 or 60. Wow. Not all of them, but most of them. And
wow.
And that is essentially a very special population of humans. They're special for many reasons, of course, mm-hmm. but they're special because they're at very high risk of developing Alzheimer's disease and are giving us insights into Alzheimer's disease in all the rest of us.
Okay. Wow. That's an interesting study. I don't think a lot of people know that. And I'm really glad that you're working on that and you've uncovered some answers. These are things that our listeners need to know. We did not talk about it last week, but I bet a lot of listeners that don't know a lot about Alzheimer's don't really understand how it happens in the brain. It's a beta amyloid protein that causes plaques and tangles. Could you explain that a little
sure,
bit more?
Sure, sure. It's not very difficult. Scientists have a bad tendency to make up long names for everything, and that confuses people. But essentially, that gene, which I told you about, that was on chromosome 21, mm-hmm. Makes a protein, which we call the amyloid precursor protein, because it's not the amyloid itself, it's the precursor.
Okay.
And what happens is the amyloid protein itself gets clipped out of that longer protein, and it has a very funny tendency to stick to itself and make fibers. And those fibers aggregate into sort of Brillo pads that occur by the millions in the parts of the brain involved in memory and cognition. Mm-hmm. These Brillo pads cause nerve cells in their vicinity to die. So that's the basic problem. And all we're doing as scientists is taking that process, dividing it into individual steps, and asking, could we design a way to block the process at this step, or okay. maybe at that step, or maybe at that step?
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? I have to tell you, you've been paid a big compliment from my husband. He said, you need to have Dr. Potter on your show because he explains things so people understand it.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
For a scientist, you put it into layman's terms for us. It can be very confusing. And I think one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that this is actually a brain disease. I have pointed out on my show before how much offense I take to it when people make Alzheimer's jokes, because they think that this is just something that just happens to somebody, or they're just a little forgetful, or old timers, or this and that. And we would not ever think about making a joke about people with cancer.
Correct.
But yet, they will make a some kind of an offhand comment about someone with Alzheimer's. And from a person that has lived this with my mom and with the thousands of people I've met with this disease and I'm currently trying to help and their families, it's painful when someone loses their memory.
It is. And it's also very important that not only the old person, but their family as well, realize that some loss of short-term memory is natural.
Mm-hmm.
So there's natural form of aging and cognitive decline, and then there is non-natural or Alzheimer or frontal temporal dementia or vascular dementia pathology. So those are real diseases, and they come on top of the natural memory problems that occur as we age.
Okay. A few years ago, we were able to actually be able to see Alzheimer's in a brain of a living person. That didn't used to be the case. Can you explain that?
Yes. When Alzheimer first described Alzheimer's disease, well, he was a modest man, didn't name it after himself, but the head of his institute named it after him. The very first patient had a very clear dementia. They were confused in terms of where they were and who their husband was. They'd be beginning to get paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the original paper, it's only a few pages long, it's shocking how closely it resembles what we call Alzheimer's disease today.
Wow.
So he was a very insightful physician. Then his patient died and he was able to examine the brain and he was able to describe the pathology that we now define as Alzheimer's disease, namely the plaques and the tangles and the inflammation.
Right.
So from that time up till the 1970s, Alzheimer's disease was considered to be very rare because it only applied to people who were young when they got this kind of dementia and this kind of pathology.
Interesting.
But now we realize that what used to be called senile dementia, mm-hmm. that is to say old person's dementia, was really mostly Alzheimer's disease. And that expanded tremendously the definition of Alzheimer's disease. And of course, we're all living longer, so that increased the numbers. So
right.
what was a very rare disease in the 50s, for instance, mm-hmm. has now become a very common disease because of this new scientific knowledge and the fact that we're all living longer.
Right. And that young woman, Augusta Dieter.
Yes.
She was 51 years old.
When she started having cognitive
right.
problems, and she lasted about 7 years before she died.
Wow. Well, I'm grateful to her for ever walking into Dr. Alois Alzheimer's office, because if she hadn't, we'd still be wondering about this disease and what we're going to do about it and how we're going to find a cure and all of that. So your study right now, you are currently taking enrollment.
That's correct. We are still enrolling for the short-term sort of safety trial, which takes
okay.
about 3 weeks. And we've just gotten approval from the Food and Drug Administration to carry out the long-term 6-month trial. So we have to apply to the the administrative organization at the university to make sure that it's safe from their point of view.
Okay.
And we'll be recruiting for that trial too.
Oh, excellent. And when we come back after our break, we're going to talk about one of the things that's super important to me, and that is getting people involved in giving money for your study. Because the reason you have about 6 months is because of the dollar amount.
That's correct.
You need money to push this forward. And I'm going to challenge our listeners to get involved with this, and I will start the charge. I will start it, okay, to try to push this forward and get them to maybe do some fundraisers out there. So if you want to directly impact Dr. Potter's research, he needs some dollars. So we're going to talk about that. In a minute, we're going to take a break, but this is Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. We're trying to find that way to take something that's a deadly disease and hard for families and make it positive and work towards hope and a future without this disease. And it's something we'll work on every day as long as we live and keep our listeners informed on everything that we come up with, from redirection skills to new strategies with research and good people getting involved. And we're going to take a break and hear a good word from our sponsor, Bellevue Heights. But you can also find more information and listen to our podcast if you didn't get a chance to hear it today, or you want to share it with someone and say, listen to this great podcast that I heard with Dr. Potter sharing his research. You can go on 1430 Cruisin' AM, or you can go on my website, summitresiliencetraining.com, and look under radio podcasts and listen whenever it's convenient for you. We'll be back in just a minute.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you will ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Living with purpose and meaning is the best reward at Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Your loved one will live life to its fullest. Licensed nurses on staff 24 hours a day, compassionate caregivers, 3 well-balanced meals, and 3 healthy snacks are a few key elements of the JEA difference. We also offer fully furnished private and semi-private rooms, meaningful activities, and scheduled outings. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Welcome back. My special guest for the second week in a row is Dr. Huntington Potter. He is a director of the Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Research Center at the University of Colorado Anschutz location. I just said to you on our break that I am really grateful to Cruisin' 1430 AM KEZW for giving me a format where I can talk about Alzheimer's and different types of dementia. If we don't talk about it, if we're not out in the open trying to share information about Alzheimer's and different types of dementia, we can't fight a disease that we're not willing to confront or talk about.
That's absolutely right. And for so long, it was hidden from both medical and political understanding because people were either denying that it was occurring or embarrassed that they were suffering from it.
And it's come such a long way. I mean, I will talk openly about my mom having this disease, even though we found out it wasn't technically Alzheimer's. It presented as Alzheimer's, and memory loss is memory loss. It affects families. Your research lab is going a long way to try to help families uncover what's going on, find a solution to what's going on, putting them through diagnostic testing and a continuum of care, and they have the ability to get in these research trials that we're talking about that you have going on. But you need money to do that.
Unfortunately, yes. If we had only our dedication to science and we didn't need the money, we could act like a sort of a 17th century scientist. Who could almost do great discoveries in their basement. But unfortunately, that's not possible anymore.
No, it's not the case. So if you could wager some kind of a guess or an estimation to take your trial all the way through to fruition, 7 million, 14 million, 20 million?
It depends upon what the results are of the 6-month trial. If the results are very super positive, it's possible that we could fund that with $4 million, $5 million, and then go to the FDA and say, look, this drug is so fabulous that we need to get it approved right away. But the most likely thing is we're going to have to tweak it a little bit. The exact length of time, the exact amount might need to be tweaked, and the FDA will say, well, we need a full phase 3 trial, and we need to look at hundreds of people. So if it costs $4 million to study 40 people and you need to do 400, you're talking about $40 million.
Right.
And that will require a collaboration between the government and industry and private donors working together.
Okay. And we thank the Colorado State They give you about $500,000 a year.
Very generous. We have, of course, always in state budgets, a restricted budget. But I have to say that I've been amazed and gratified that the agreement to give $500,000 a year for the research at the Anschutz campus on Alzheimer's disease was a bipartisanly supported
bill. I love that. I'm glad that, our politicians and our congressmen and all those senators and everybody can come together on something.
Yes. Well, Alzheimer's is an equal opportunity killer, and we're all at risk. And from a public health point of view, if we don't solve this problem, the cost will be unpayable.
Oh, absolutely. And it's increasing every year. So let's try to trim that mountain down to a 14er for a minute. Say we could have a challenge out there to our listeners. Let's raise some money for Dr. Potter. Let's help him get to where he needs. Maybe we could set a goal of, say, $5 million or something. So we can't do $40 million today, but we could try. But you spend a ton of time in your office, more than you'd probably like to, writing grants.
Yes, that's essential. I'm afraid to say that every minute we spend writing a grant to ask for money from either a donor or a company or the federal or the state government is a minute away from the lab.
Right, right. Well, I'll tell you what, listeners out there, I am going to throw down the gauntlet. And every year in August, my husband and I have a little party in our backyard where we play music and we invite about 65 or 70 of our friends. And some of them are listening right now. So I'm going to make that a fundraiser for you.
Well,
this year. And we're going to try and see if at my party, if I could get everybody that comes to give $100 or more, then all of a sudden that starts adding up, right?
It does.
Yeah.
And that would be fabulous.
And all you listeners out there, when you're wondering what you can do, if you're doing your estate planning, if you've got a gift that you want to give, if you just want to help and give dollars straight to research, that would be awesome. Help Dr. Potter out. If with your approval, I'm going to put your information of how they can donate straight to your lab and help you to move forward with this on my website.
That would be fabulous.
And we're going to see what we can do to be part of the solution. So that's my idea. Listeners, email me at jill@summitresiliencetraining.com, or you can go on Cruising 1430, go to shows, scroll down to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, and my email is right there. Click on it and tell me how you're going to help raise money for Dr. Potter's lab and this research with leukine and caffeine and anything else you want to study. Because I want to make it my goal to be able to tell my grandchildren someday that I was part of the solution.
You're already part of the solution.
I didn't just say prayers and hope for the best and make you and your team do all the hard work. That's something. If we want a world without Alzheimer's, we've got to get busy. We've got to get involved. And this is an opportunity for all of you to go straight to the source and give your research dollars straight to the research. And I love that. So I usually do a tip for the day, but I did not do that the last time, last week. And I don't really have one for this week. But what I'm going to do next week is have a really intimate conversation with the listeners. I've gotten a lot of letters and I've gotten phone calls and emails from people that think they need to do this by themselves. And I want to respect the people that won't ask for help. I wish you would. Help is out there. But if you're going to do this alone, I can take care of my wife. I can take care of my husband. And I don't need anyone else's help. I'm going to have a whole half hour of just conversations of how to make your home safer, how to manage your own emotions, how to work with strategies and techniques. But we're going to have an open letter here, Hank, to our listeners to talk about what we're going to do to make this disease livable We're not going to struggle with it. And at the end of the show, I'm going to try to implore you to maybe ask for some help, take a class, be part of a study, do something. But I know those folks are out there. I get your calls on the weekends, and I know you're there. I want to help you. You're not alone. There are a lot of people out here working on this disease. And if you're going to be by yourself, then I'm going to give you some tools to help you. That's just how it's going to be. Because that's what we do. We are resilient. We overcome obstacles and adversity to find a positive outcome. And everybody's doing it their own way. And we're going to try and help you whatever way you want to walk down that road and on that journey. Thank you, Dr. Potter, for being with me.
It's a pleasure.
A real privilege for me to have you on the show. And I will do everything in my power to assist you with whatever I can do. If I can send you people to be in your research, if I can make my own donations, have my own fundraisers or what have you, we're going to do it. And thank you for everything you do to try to be our leader to fight against this disease. So we appreciate you being here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in this week. Thank you to Bellevue Heights Special Care Center for Alzheimer's out there in Aurora. And we'll see you next week on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Visit her website at summitresiliencetraining.com to learn more, and join us next week as we learn more about dementia, Alzheimer's, and overcoming obstacles with a positive outcome. See you next time.